Welcome to Perspectives Online and on Air from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. So good to have you at the other end of the cybernet right now, and also the radio waves. This program pre-recorded on Thursday, September 17th for playback on Tuesday, September 22nd. Now, we're using the Zoom platform to connect with our guests, and we'll also remind you the show will appear both on WFSU-FM and the WFSU Public Media Facebook page. Now, this program is the first in our series of political perspectives in anticipation of the November 3rd general election in Leon County. And over the course of the next few weeks, we're going to be talking with candidates vying for several offices, including two Leon County Commission contests, one Tallahassee City Commission race, and also a local referendum on a proposed children's council for Leon County. That's all straight ahead. Today's Political Perspectives features the candidates for the Leon County School Superintendent. There is a sitting incumbent and two challengers, one who will appear on the ballot, the other who is a qualified write-in candidate, and we'll give each candidate a few minutes to introduce themselves, talk about their background, and also to tell us what they consider to be the unique qualities that make them the preferred person to do the job. And after that, we'll get into some specific issues pertinent to the school district itself. So in advance of the program, we held a random drawing for who would start us off. The name that came up was Keisha Williams, who is the write-in candidate. Ms. Williams, please get us started here. Talk a little bit about your background and how that contributes to your qualifications for the job of Leon School Superintendent. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hello, my name is Keisha Washington. Washington, not Williams.
Sorry about that.
No problem. I am a write-in candidate. I'm also a native of Tallahassee, Florida. Born and raised here, graduate from Gabby High School. Later on, went to the military where I did 10 and a half years. After that, General Dynamics, entered the school system in 06, where I was PTA, President, SAC, DAC, everything you could think of, which was in Orlando, Florida. During that time, I learned the verbiage. I learned to advocate. I came up to Tallahassee, where we learned to be strong supporters of teachers and students. Also learned the curriculum and also learned how to do class assignments and teaching as well. My credentials might not be heavy as my opponents, but however, I'm very involved and very aware of what goes on in school districts. And I'm very compassionate of what goes on in school districts, which makes me a great candidate. I'm also aware of the budget process. In the military, I was over $1 billion of budget. I was in a predicament to let everyone know either we ready or not to deploy, but over thousands of soldiers, whether it's logistics, whether it's health-wise, we combined together. And I would give briefings to our commander and our battalion sergeant majors on our assignments. In the school system, almost did the same thing, but at a PTA perspective. Also helped out with students and teaching. I'm a mentor as well. Leon County School System won several awards for Volunteer of the Year, also here locally. And I just love what I do. I've been doing it without being paid for years. So my heart is there, my passion is there. And I'm Keisha Washington. I would love to be your great superintendent.
Thank you, Ms. Washington. I do appreciate that, and please forgive the misidentification. We had also, of course, invited the incumbent in the race, who is Rocky Hanna, the current superintendent of schools for Leon County. At the outset of the program, he has not as yet checked in. If he does, as we go forward, we'll, of course, include him in the conversation as well. But we turn next to get acquainted comments from Dr. Pam Hightower, who is also running for Leon School Superintendent. Ms. Hightower, go right ahead, ma'am. Tell us a bit about yourself and some of your unique qualifications for the job.
Thank you. Thank you. First of all, I would like to thank you for giving us this opportunity to get before our citizens in Leon County. As you said, I am Dr. Pam Hightower, and I'm a candidate for superintendent because I see the need for change, and I understand how to move this district forward. I want every child, regardless of their circumstances, their zip code, their socioeconomic status, to have a high-quality education experience, an opportunity to have a promising career and a promising future. I have a bachelor's degree in elementary ed and a master's degree in elementary ed, also a PhD in educational leadership. I have served in various capacities, first as a parent, as a volunteer, as a paraprofessional, as a teacher, a primary specialist, a principal, assistant principal, and a district level administrator, where I served as the McKinney Vento Homeless Coordinator and the Title I Director for the district. For the last several years, I have been assigned to work with D and F schools, and I've been successful in helping with the help of the teachers and the staff at these schools to turn those schools around. I'm best qualified for this role because I am an instructional leader who understands curriculum and instruction. I worked in Title I schools, as I said earlier, to turn those schools around. Appalachie, Springwood, Hartsville, Riley, and Connolly Elementary, working with those schools to try to improve their school grade, was boots on the ground. I got to see up close and personal the needs of those schools and what we were able to do. We were able to successfully turn five of those seven schools around using research-based programs, but most of all, making students believe in themselves. That was the magic. It wasn't anything magic. We had the same students at Weston that were there prior to the year when they got the F. But we instilled a sense of pride in those students. We made them believe that they could do it. And they did. They rose to the occasion. As I said, one of my favorite quotes is, no one rises to low expectation. So we have to set the bar high. And that's what I have done in every place that I have been in, is set the bar high for myself, for my staff, and my students. And they have always rose to the occasion. So as an instructional leader, I know that I have the skills to turn this around. As a person who leads with their heart and compassion, I have the compassion to turn this district around. I will listen, and then I will put a plan and action in, and we will move this district to where it needs to be for all of our students, all 34,000 of our students, and all of our teachers and our staffs and our parents. We're living in unprecedented times that calls for leadership. I'm the person, I have those leadership skills that will help us to move our schools to where it needs to be. Together we rise with the Hightower and the Hightower team.
Thank you very much, Ms. Washington. We also have another candidate who is just joining us via Zoom, who is Rocky Hanna. He is the incumbent superintendent of the Leon County School District. And Mr. Hanna, so good to see you, sir. Thank you for joining us. And you come at exactly the right time. We're giving everyone an opportunity to provide a little bit of background, some introductory remarks for the benefit of folks who maybe do not know you personally. And also, if you could talk a little bit about how that background informs your desire to continue on in the role of superintendent of Leon County Schools. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, first, I apologize to being late to the party. I was out visiting schools this morning. The 40 of our 45 schools checking on how reopening was going. All in all, very, very pleased. But it's been a heavy lift for our administrators and our teachers. But we're off and running. I know there were some naysayers in the community about whether or not we should reopen schools, but I think it was absolutely the right thing to do, and we're moving forward. So as far as me personally, born and raised in Tallahassee, a lifelong resident of Leon County, I'm a product of our public schools. Started my career back in 1988 as a hall monitor at Leon High School. Then moved over to Godby High School, where one of the candidates in this race was a student at Godby when I was a teacher there. Taught American history and government and economics at Godby. Kind of cut my teeth with Miss Washington and learned a lot as a classroom teacher. I left there. I went to Lincoln High School. I ran a program for kids that were at risk of dropping out of school because of substance abuse issues or truancy. And then, as my wife said, I turned to the dark side and left the classroom and became a school administrator. I was a dean of students for 4 years, an assistant principal. I had the honor of serving as principal of my alma mater, Leon High School, from 2005 to 2012. Was a district administrator. And then in 2016, at the end of my career, I have been bestowed the honor of serving as superintendent of schools. So it's been an amazing career, a wonderful journey. You couldn't have not have written a better story to go from a hall monitor to a superintendent. Again, I'm just so proud and honored to serve this community. My wife's a middle school science teacher and just love kids and love trying to help them figure out what this next step of their life is.
Well, Mr. Hanna, since you name-checked Ms. Washington, we'll throw the next question to her. And I'd like each of you to kind of respond to this, if you could. You know, state educational officials, as you mentioned, Rocky, the COVID situation is kind of the preeminent concern right now, not only in the Leon District, but across the entire state, the entire nation, when it comes to our schools. But here in Florida, some state education folks had voiced some concerns this summer about achievement gaps widening if all students had to continue with distance learning this year. Now, with roughly half of our district opting to take classes online, what are your ideas, Ms. Washington, starting with you, for monitoring and preventing that achievement gap that the state folks were worried about?
Well, as I said in previous forums, I would have gotten a database. I would have got a database of who am I speaking with, whether it's the child, the parent, the mom, the dad, who they're living with. Is there a successful communication with this student? What's their attendance? What's their previous testing look like? Their overall students and their holistic approach in this, our school system. I would have took that and see if they were digital or in class. With this achievement gap, we've got to make sure all gaps are closed. We shouldn't even be in the gaps right now. But I was also provided paper packets as well as digital. My high school students would got digital. My elementary would have got packets. For those who will not respond, and I've been concerned about because they are at risk learning, I would have had to go visit home visits if possible. I would have had to got my staff and say, hey, we cannot leave nobody behind. So if must, let's go check out the homes. If we're not, if they're not in attendance, if they're not aware exactly how to put a computer together, if they're not knowledgeable what's going on all overall, because right now we're at a standstill. We are at a standstill. We're at a new foundation in my eyesight. And I would have taken advantage of sort of rerouting things, but also elevating them as well, because we're at a standstill. And there's going to be some gaps. There's going to be some people left behind. There's going to be some frustrations, as we see already. And there's going to be very emotions come, as we've seen already, you know, high emotions. So with saying that, I would have probably did some face-to-face visits as well, whether they're digital or at home.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Washington. Dr. Hightower, your thoughts there again on addressing that achievement gap, especially since some between some of the schools in the more affluent parts of the county and then some of the Title I schools where there was already a problem.
Thank you. As you said, the Title I, there were already a problem, and having our students out of school since March has created even more of a gap with our students. First of all, I think we have to assess where the students are. We have to have a formal assessment to know where our students are so we can close those gaps. One of the things that I would have done is sent books home by all of our students. So they would have the textbooks at home as the teacher's teaching. They would have the textbook. I'm understanding from some of our schools did that, not all of our schools, but I think all of our teachers' students need the books at home so they could also keep up with teachers. The other thing I would like to do is also make sure that we are recording the lessons so that our students need the repetition, especially some of our ESC students and our students who are falling behind. If we record those lessons, then parents can go back and look at that at a later time so they can get the repetition, get more and more practice with that. Another thing we could do is also making sure we're having hubs, using our community resources, our churches, our community centers. So we're having pods in those communities where students could still social distance, but we can employ teachers after school, just like we did when the school is running. To close that achievement gap, we have had after school programs. And I'm not sure whether the 21st century program still exists, but as a principal in a Title I school, prior to having the 21st century, we used our federal Title I dollars to have an after school program, a Saturday school. I think because where we are, this is the new normal, we still must provide those opportunities and all of our students to close that achievement gap, whether it's Saturday school, after school, and where teachers can go into the community and have those small at churches, at the community centers, or even at our own site, at the school site, where they're doing virtual after school program, just like we're doing at school, and working with those small groups of students to make sure we are closing that achievement gap. The one thing that I keep hearing, and I know we've had professional development, that teachers are still not feeling as good as they need to about the curriculum. It's new, as with everything, it's new. but having targeted professional development so that teachers can feel good about the material they're giving our students. So that's another piece that we need to really hone in on. I heard that as late as last night from a teacher who I spoke with. They're still, professional development is the key, making sure that our teachers are feeling good about what they're doing, because this was quick and it was new for us. The other thing that we need to make sure that we're doing is that we're listening to our teachers, to our staff, to parents, to our children, and making those adjustments so that they're comfortable. I think the one thing, and I hear the district say, having passion and compassion, we must have compassion and passion, but we must also make sure that, and when we listen, when we hear, that we make those changes so that we can make teachers feel more comfortable. We're already uptight because where we are. And so it's a little more apprehensive being in the classroom, but when we can make teachers feel that they're being listened to and they're heard, then it makes them feel more relaxed, and then it trickles down to the students. So those are just something: progress monitoring, assessing where we are, the additional help after school, whether it's virtual or in the community, in pods, are some things that we can do. Also, as I said, taping the lesson so if I come home at night, I can go back and go with my child. Those are things that I would like to see happen.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Hightower. Mr. Hanna, your solution to the gap moving forward, what do we do?
Well, on August the 31st, we basically propped up two independent school systems of 15,000 students running simultaneously, where we had 15,000 students in our schools and approximately 15,000 students, or half of our student population, at home, and we brought the classroom to them. Over the course of the summer, we handed out just short of 9,000 desktops, along with dongles, wireless converters, and webcams for our students who were at home in Digital Academy. We've also shifted around and passed out thousands of mobile devices for kids that are in brick and mortar in case they have to quarantine, that they can easily transition back and forth in and out of the classroom. Three things that we have done to help with this. One, we created an intervention team of individuals that work alongside of the school social worker that is going out and knocking on doors and finding kids that have not engaged since the start of the school year, working to find them with the social worker and that intervention team. The next thing we did is we're setting up an after hours tutorial, tutoring folks that kids can call that need assistance with core subjects, English, math, science, and social studies. And then finally, we set up a parent academy where parents can learn to navigate the technology that we're using with our new learning management system. And so those folks, those parents can get tutorials to help them navigate their role in being at home with their child that's learning. This has been a heavy lift on our district administrators, on our principals, and especially on our teachers. Like I said, I've visited probably 100 classrooms in the last 3 weeks now, and our teachers are doing amazing work. It was a lot for them to learn. That's why we gave them an extra week of professional development and shifted our school calendar from 180 to 175 days so they would have 2 weeks. Honestly, they needed more than that, and they're still learning. But every day, you can see it, they're getting better and better and better, and our children are getting better at navigating the technology that's required as well. A lot of these teacher lessons are taped, so if a kid cannot be there in real time, they can go back on in a later time and click on and watch the lesson for that school day. But I am concerned we're missing a number of elementary students, especially at our Title I schools. We know this virus has had an adverse impact on the African American community, and there are a lot of people that are fearful, they're scared, they don't feel comfortable going back to school. And that's why we came up with this plan to give parents and families choices. And if you were good, in a good place, and you felt okay, then by all means, you want your child back in a brick and mortar school. But if you're not, if something's going on, or maybe you have an older relative living at home, we would bring the classroom to them. And we're still working through some of the kinks, but I'm going to be honest with you, Mr. Flanagan, we are positioned in a much better place than even I had expected, given the rapid turnaround time we had from the end of last year. We know our devices are on the way. They're now starting to arrive here in the next several weeks, which is very exciting. But in the meantime, we didn't hold a pity party. We handed out desktops and did the best we could to adjust. And I'm proud of the efforts that we've made. But we're going to continue to use those intervention teams, the after-school tutorials for kids that are needing help, and then those parent academies to ensure our parents are in a good place and and can help with their children at home.
The three contenders for the Leon County School Superintendent's job, we just heard from the incumbent, Rocky Hanna. The challengers, Keisha Washington and Dr. Pam Hightower, here with us on our political perspectives, both on air and online. Some dates to keep in mind for the upcoming general election in Leon County. Vote by mail ballots will start going out September 24th. To those voters who've requested them. The deadline for voter registration is October 5th. Early voting will kick off on October 19th, and early voting locations are being posted on the Supervisor of Elections website. General Election Day, of course, is Tuesday, November 3rd, and more than half of people during the primary opted to go by vote by mail. And Mark Early, who is our election supervisor, informs us that went really, really well. He's hoping for a repeat of that as we head towards the general election. Well, before we kind of depart from the COVID-19 situation, though, I have to ask all three of you what you consider to be kind of the tripwire in the event, and we hope this is not how things are going to turn out, but the event that you combine COVID-19 with perhaps a worse than usual flu season, and you have a lot of sick kids and sick staff and sick teachers to deal with. At what point do you say, okay, we are going to at least temporarily suspend in-person classrooms? We're going full digital. Let's ask the incumbent first. What is your tripwire for that, Rocky? At what point do you say, okay, we're going to have to back off for a bit?
Well, I think the governor and the commissioner have made it very clear that moving first, that we must open our brick and mortar schools or face severe financial consequences. And second, moving forward, that any adjustments we make need to be surgical and not sweeping. And those are the words by Commissioner Corcoran, meaning that if we need to go in and shut down a class for a couple of weeks, that we have the ability to do that. I don't see us in full retreat again. We are closely monitoring, and we are positioned well. That's why we put in all the hard work on the front end. So if kids have to quarantine or have to go home, that they can move home, take their device home, and then when the things are better, then they can just simply come back in. But the commissioner and the governor made it clear that they want to do individual strikes and not sweeping, shutting down schools. We have to get permission from them in order to do that. We report to them every day. We are monitoring every single day kids that test positive, employees that test positive, working hand in hand with the Leon County Health Department. We have a dashboard on our website at leoncountyschools.net of how we're trending. We've had kids quarantine, coming in and out of quarantine, but this is what we expected, quite honestly. I would be surprised if we went back into full retreat. I think we've shown over the last now almost 3 weeks that we can withstand this virus and push back and fight back. But we know as employees and children are coming in and out that we're going to have to monitor those situations. And then if we need, again, to shut a classroom or a school down for 2 weeks, then we're positioned to do that. But I do not see our district going back, running back home again. I just don't see that.
Okay. Dr. Hightower, your thoughts on that?
We're going to have to follow the advice of the CDC guidelines. And the CDC guidelines, if they get high, then I would be looking to the scientists and to the CDC to see what we need to do. Because I think safety is first. I know what the governor has said. And I know that as a superintendent, we're responsible for those persons that in our district. And I would do what is best for the students and the families in Leon County, along with the guidelines of from the CDC. If it gets up high, rather than looking at a surgical report and we have to retreat back to home, then that's what we would do in order to ensure that our families, our students, and the citizens of this district are safe.
Your approach, Ms. Washington, your thoughts?
If the number should increase and it be detrimental, I would have to go case by case basis, but I would have everyone home. And if I could get the maximum of 5 students, because I understand that parents work, and most likely shut down the high school to use those classrooms as division for those 5 students as well. Because what we have, one of the cases is parents are working. You might have 2 of them that may be a doctor, or one may work at the prison. So they have to go to work. And in that case, I would have to have somebody there. But like I say, at the max, 5 students per teacher, and it would definitely be case by case basis. And like I say, safety first. Safety is always first.
Another question that gets us kind of away from the COVID situation, although it is connected with that, because let's face it, anything having to do with money is being impacted by the coronavirus situation at the moment. We just heard from the latest revenue estimating conference at the state of Florida that revenues are going to be down somewhere around $2.7 billion for the next fiscal year. They're already drawing back for the current fiscal year. Even as those tax revenues decline, we are likely to also see some pullback when it comes to support coming from local property tax revenues. Although there's a lot of people buying houses right now, which is, I guess, bargain hunters are out there in abundance looking for some deals. But still, it's going to fall back onto the school district when it comes to the amount of money that is available for such things as capital outlay for schools that need repair or expansion or whatever. We just came off of a big project at Rickards High School, but you know, what other ones are going to be needed to be done, and where does that money come from? So let's switch it around. Dr. Hightower, starting with you, what are some capital outlay projects that you might be looking at if you are elected superintendent, number one? And number two, where does the money come from?
I think, listen to the last school board member, last school board meeting, I understood that there were no current projects that were out there to be for capital outlay. But now if we're in a crisis and COVID raises its ugly head and we lose the money funds, or we have to lose funds, then we would have to prioritize. We would have to look at those things. We would have to analyze our budget, prioritize those things that are needed. If a heating unit goes out, we know we have to have heat and air conditioning in the school. So those things would have to be taken care of. But such things as painting, replacing carpet, or some of those things that we could put off, we would have to prioritize those and work with our school board to make sure that we're meeting those needs that the school. Looking at first the things that are for safety, making sure that those things are first. We may have to go back and look at our reserve. We may have to pull from some of our reserve money. We have to look at all of our federal allocations, making sure that we're using all of those in the right way. Making sure that if we need to ask, I know the county got CARE money. If we need money from that to help us with some of these problems that we're having in the school, tapping into every resource that we can. But I think the first thing is looking at our budget. We are reallocating funds, prioritizing our needs, and putting those things on hold that can wait, except for those safe to the life situations that we must take care of.
Okay. Ms. Washington, construction, improvements, repair, maintenance, that kind of thing. Well, what do you do with that?
I'm going to piggyback a little bit off of Dr. Hightower as far as the CARE. And if we need assistance, we're going to have to ask the state and ask for federal funds as well, because in a dire situation, I'm hoping that what they would just, some would say common sense, and some would just be knowledgeable with the past history, that they would give it to us. However, being from Orlando, well, not actually being from Orlando, but working with Orlando and just learning, when there's construction, there's money for school. So as long as FSU is building and there's building around, there is money for schools. There is money. It's just how it's allocated and how it's been brought into the school system, and making sure that it's allocated properly and throughout the district. First come, first basis is not the answer. It's who needs it first. And also with Rickards, I know they have tapped in with the stakeholders. So we can ask our stakeholders, ask TCC, also for funding. They've had help with doing so in their schools. So it's not that we don't have it, it's just the process of getting it for our schools.
And we wind up with you on that question. Mr. Hanna, put on your builder's hat for a sec.
If I might, real quick, going back to the final question, I don't want people to think that we're not following CDC guidelines. We've said that from the very beginning, working with the Department of Health, we are following and abiding by CDC guidelines. So I don't want people to get the misconception that we're not. And we've been adjusting to those guidelines from day one back in last March. To the issue of construction, I am very proud of the work we've done both at Rickards High School and at Fairview Middle School. That was a promise I made to the residents in that part of our community was to completely transform those campuses, and I'm very proud of the work that we will complete there next summer. If you haven't been by those campuses, I would encourage you to do so. Although I'm a registered Democrat, I'm a lifelong Democrat since I registered to vote when many, many years ago, my fiscal responsibility tendencies lean a little to the right. I'm very fiscally conservative. I'm proud of the fact that we've added $2 million to our emergency reserve. I reduced capital debt by over $60 million in the last 4 years. So we're in a good position financially to withstand somewhat of a hit financially, because to your point, we know it's coming. We know sales tax revenues are down. We used last April and when the governor issued the stay at home order as a bottom number. It wasn't as bad as we had as predicted. I think we're about $500,000 down for that month. We know we're going to need to make adjustments. We are going to finish those projects at Rickards and Fairview, and then kind of see what revenues we bring in, because we know not only do we receive LCIF funds at 1.5 mils, we also have a local half penny sales tax. We generate about $22 million a year, but we have accounted for a reduction of those funds moving forward. And then we just need to prioritize. But I'm proud of the work we've done at those schools without having to borrow any new money. And then us to be able to reduce capital debt. Right now, unless things really hit the tank, I have a plan in place for Leon County Schools to be completely debt-free by 2028. And so we're on course to do that, notwithstanding just a severe financial collapse.
Beyond bricks and mortar, of course, we got bone and blood, especially when it comes to teachers. And ahead of this year, there was some pretty unhappy folks with the local teachers union when they surveyed their members and found that many were afraid to go back into the classroom. Some even threatened to quit. There has been some churn from what we understand. Do we have enough teachers going forward? And how do you recruit new teachers to fill vacant positions when the pipeline coming down from the institutions of higher learning are also a bit problematic? Dr. Hightower, let's throw that to you first, and then we'll go around the bend here.
I just listened to the school board meeting. I know that we've had about 30-some teachers that have resigned or taken leave, which is, I know, has impacted our school district. And then we also, last year, Florida started with 2,000 teachers last year, and I'm sure even more this year with the pandemic that we are facing. What I would do is look at what I would love to do as a superintendent is start a teacher education program at all of our high schools so that we start recruiting teachers at an early age and they graduate from high school with an AA degree and go on to college and then come back and work in our district. That's one program I would like to put on. That's a long-term program. Right now, we're going to have to go back and look at those persons who are graduating and from our local colleges. We have three universities here. We have Flagler, FSU, and FAMU, those students who are graduating, making sure that we are recruiting, heavily recruiting those students, because the whole state, the whole country is looking for teachers right now because of the pandemic. So we're going to have to do something heavy to make sure that we're out recruiting those teachers that we have. And then we've got to make sure we retain the ones that we have. That's critical. With the 39 that we've lost, we need to set up training programs across for our teachers to make sure that they're getting the resources, the professional development that they have, that they need. Also, salary is another thing that we've got to look at our salaries. How are we going to, I know the governor has given money for the 47.5 at the beginning. I don't know how that's going to be impacted with the other teachers. I listened to the school board and I know that there's a plan in place for that, but that's another thing we've got to look at, because that's at the beginning step. How do we make sure that all of our teachers are compensated for? The other thing that I really, that I hear a lot, teachers are concerned about the health insurance. We've got to make sure that we can do something to make sure that we offset the cost of health insurance. They're telling me that the health insurance is like getting a raise because the health insurance costs is so much. So those are some things that I have heard from teachers, that we could do some of those things. We may be able to retain more of our teachers, and then we've got to do more to recruit teachers. As a Title I director, when I was Title I director, I did a Title I recruitment fair just for Title I schools, because as a Title I principal, it was really hard to get teachers. So before the year ended, we did a Title I recruitment fair in May so that our Title I teachers, principals could go out before this year ended to Florida State, to Flagler, to other places. We sent it out nationwide and we had people to come from all over. So that year, most of our schools started the Title I started at capacity with that, just thinking outside of the box. So those are the kind of things that I will make sure that we do, is making sure that we're giving every opportunity to pull those teachers in, capitalizing on those things that will help us to make sure we recruit and retrain all of our teachers.
Okay, throw the same question to you, Mr. Hanna.
Well, we knew before this pandemic that we had a teacher shortage crisis. The individuals just weren't entering the profession, that there was a lot of high stakes testing going on, mandated by the state, and their pay was being tied to the test results of their kids. And to get in the profession with a college degree at $37,000 or $38,000, they were just passing. And so this has only compounded that problem now with the pandemic. I applaud the governor for making teachers and teacher raises a priority. We're not going to be able to get to the 47.5, but we can take a step in the right direction. For us, it was about $5 million. We have locally identified another $4 million as a line item to move the needle significantly with teachers this year. Fingers crossed, unless the legislature comes in after the election and does something crazy to our budget, we are positioned well. Look, teachers did not get in this profession for money. They got in it because they love children, they love our community, and they want to make our world a better place. And they knew when they got in that they would not have a house at St. George Island. But they also have bills to pay, and then they also have people to support. And we have to, if we talk about how important they are, talk is talk, but action is action. We have to start paying our instructors like the professionals that they are. If not, the problem is just going to get worse and worse. And so I'm committed to do that. I know our school board's committed to do that as well. And we have not received a lot of new money from the state. Over the course of the last several years, our teachers have gotten about $8 million in salary and bonuses. And we're positioned now to add another $4 million to that, to really move the needle for Leon County and throughout the state of Florida, where we rank. But we have to show them, and it's not only money, the other perks that come along with it, and it's just being valued and being appreciated. That goes a long way as well. But we just have to continue to uplift our teachers and let them know how much we think of them, we believe in them, and how much we value them.
Thank you, sir. We'll wind up our teacher appreciation discussion here with you, Keisha Washington. What do we do about replacing, although all teachers are by definition irreplaceable, but for the openings that we may have in the district for teachers who, for whatever reason, just can't keep on keeping on in the current situation, how do we recruit more and how do we keep the ones that we have, compensated and confident going forward?
You have to listen to what they want, actually. You also have to listen to what was at hand. Earlier before the summer came, the governor had stated that everyone would pass. Nobody would be left behind. So I would have worked with that. When I used to go on job interviews, one of my strong points would be I will work harder today to have a less stress for tomorrow. So with saying that, everyone would pass, I would have stopped what we were doing last year to prepare for the summer and the upcoming fall. So the computer process, everything we're doing now had already been established along the lines with that database. Who am I speaking with? Who needs help? So by the time the fall has come, we would already be established who needs that extra. This would, again, given less stress to our teachers. This would also appropriate them to, okay, we're ready for the school year now. I know I'm dealing with X, Y, and Z. And for the most part, most students stay within that same school. You might lose a few here and there, but for the most part, most students stay in that same school. My guidance counselor would also have in that database that I said earlier, where's the student? How do they need to be guided? What needs to be implemented for them being a senior and getting ready to exit out Leon County schools? So you have to listen also what's going on from the governor, what the teachers want, and how to move forward with everybody, with nobody being left behind. And with that saying established, we would have been a little bit more ahead of the process than what we are now. And it, to me, would have just been a little less stressful and able to keep them, letting them know that, your voice is heard. We're here for you. And this is how we're going on forward.
From the professional to the personal here, Keisha, tell me about the educator in your life who had the most impact on you.
The educator in my life that had the most impact on me was my third grade teacher, Dr. Barbara James. I first met her at Kate Sullivan when we moved back from Orlando in the 80s. And she had just moved from Jacksonville as well. And her heart, I mean, I've never met anyone like her, ever. Living in the project, she took care of a handful of us. Those who would, she would take us to the movies. She would ask us if we need food. She would ask us if there's anything she could do, you know, for us, because we were just average kids, you know, living in the projects. And she saw that we need that need. So with saying that, I was the only one that hung with her, that stayed with her. She later on became the principal at Kate Sullivan, and then also the principal at Vaughn Elementary School. And everything that she taught me, I took it to dear heart. I just believe I have her mantle, actually, and I would never forget it. There were some teachers who were had their heart set for children and understood the Title I student life, but then there were some who understood it but just didn't really care. You know, they would say, she's not going to amount to anything. She's not going to be X, Y, Z. And this was in high school when you definitely need that extra edge or that extra push in life to say, hey, you're going to make it. You're going to be all right no matter where you come from. But yeah, I would say Dr. Barbara James was my number one educator.
Rocky Hanna, rack your brain here. Of all the probably thousands of educators you've known over the years, which one stands out and whose voice still resonates in your head today?
Well, for me personally, it would have to be Dr. Linda Teague, who was a longtime teacher, and actually her grandmother was also a teacher at Leon High School for many years. At the end of my junior year of high school, my father died suddenly from heart failure, and I was the oldest of three children. I had a little brother that was 14 and a sister that was 10 and a mom that was home at the time that was a nurse. And that had a devastating effect on me. And I didn't know really how to respond as being the male of the house. So part of me wanted to drop out at 16 and go to work to help support my mother and my little brother and my little sister. And thankfully, Mike Conley and Gene Cox and some folks at Leon convinced me to stay in school. But my senior year, I had a psychology class with Dr. Teague, and she really helped me deal with the grief that I was experiencing at the time. At the sudden, you know, my dad was only 38 years old. And it was a really hard time in my life. And we talk about teachers, and yeah, I know it's important to get kids ready for the standardized testing that comes. And, you know, we had standardized testing back then as well, but there's also that human component to teachers. And she helped me through a really difficult time in my life. And it's something I will, I'll never be able to repay her other than to say thank you to her as often as I can. But she was a saint. But we have so many teachers like Linda Teague that are in this profession for the right reason, and this their love of children, and I'm just so blessed and honored to be a part of this profession. But again, back to our teachers, that's who we're here to support, because they're doing the Lord's work each and every day.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Pam, tell us about your favorite.
That will be Ms. Naomi Cummings, my first grade teacher in rural Jefferson County. Ms. Cummings made all of us feel special. She taught me to read. I hated math. And she tells a story today that how I run over to my aunt Celis and tell her I had a hard time with math. So my stomach would hurt every day at math time, but I love reading. And so she still tells that story today. She's 86 years old right now, but she is one of my favorite people because of her love for education and the love that she instilled in me. And the second person would be my dad. He was not an educator. I taught my dad to read after I became a teacher. My dad would drive truck all day, and in the afternoons he would get off and he would come to my adult ed class and learn to read. I taught my dad to read as an adult, and he always made me believe that there's nothing that I couldn't do. And I feel his presence right now because I know that he's with me and he's instilled in me. He instilled in all of us that the sky's the limit, that anything we put our minds to and work hard at, we could do it. And I have lived that in everything that I have done. I worked hard and always believed that if I worked hard, that I could achieve that I wanted to achieve. And so my first grade teacher and my dad is why I'm who I am today. And I give thanks to both of them
Thank you so much for sharing that. What a great story. Folks, time draws nigh. Let me give each of you just a couple minutes to wrap up, to make your best case to the voters for the upcoming November 3rd election, although a lot of folks are going to be filling out those mail ballots before then, so this will give you an opportunity to take your best shot at reaching them. Ms. Washington, let's start with you. Make your case for the voters, please.
Hi, my name is Keisha Washington. As I said earlier, I'm a graduate of Gabby High School, and it's cliche, they say it's time for change. I like to say, don't be so caught up in the credentials that I don't have. Let me be more concerned of those who have credentials who have not provided for you thus far that you want to see. Not only talking, I'm not really talking about the current ones, but the previous superintendents as well. So I come to you today with my diverse background, military, also working at a four-year college, Barry University, being administrative assistant and recruiter, also with my military background, with my budgeting and a parent and having compassion and doing the things that I've already done. I come to you as an advocator. I come to you as some person with a person with knowledge and strength to get the job done as a superintendent. I come to you listening to what your wants and your needs are, and I come to you settling for what you need to get this district continue on as an A district, whether they see it as not in the lettering, but in our hearts, we will always be an A district. And I come to you saying that I won't make promises now, but I can, you, I would do the best I can to make what you, to change it how you want it to be changed.
Thank you, Ms. Washington. Rocky Hanna, your turn.
First, I'd like to thank you all for hosting us today, and also thank WFSU for your wonderful partnership with Leon County Schools. You're truly a blessing to so many of our kids. And I see Kim Kelling on the call today. And Kim, personally, all you've done at the Gasvini Learning Center to help our young people grow and to become young adults and to see a path for their future, just very appreciative. So again, it's been an honor to serve as superintendent of schools. I love Tallahassee. I love our community. I've worked with kids my entire life. And 4 years ago, I made some promises. I made promises to our community, and more importantly, I made promises to our children. First and foremost, to eliminate wasteful spending at the district level and push those resources down into the schools and the classrooms where it belongs. And I'm proud to say we've pushed an additional $3 million a year down into our schools and classrooms for school supplies, furniture, technology, and those things that principals and the classroom teachers need. We also made a priority the arts and athletics. We get an additional $1 million a year to support the arts and athletics programs in our school. And we know those programs are of vital importance to keep our kids engaged. It's a big reason a lot of them come to school, and a big reason why a lot of them graduate from high school. Talking about graduating from high school, I'm proud that we increased our graduation rates. We're now over 93%, fifth highest in the state of Florida. So academically, we're doing well. We pushed a lot of resources down for our schools and our teachers, for our employees. We've raised the minimum wage by 25%. I've given support staff workers, bus drivers, food service workers between a 15 and a 20% pay increase over the last 3.5 years. I talked about what we did for teachers, about $8 million and another $4 million budgeted for this year to help with teacher salaries, added to the emergency reserve, reduced capital debt by $60 million. Financially, we are in a very good place to weather the storm. Some of my top priorities were Title I schools. We implemented pre-K all day at our Title I schools for parents that couldn't afford the wraparound services. We also committed an additional $250,000 a year to Title I principals to help those kids be able to go on field trips, like students in other parts of our community. Really started bearing down on pre-K and VPK programs. Have a director of pre-K early learning now that's partnering with the Early Learning Coalition, because we know if we invest resources on the front end, when kids are 0 to 5, when 95% of their brain is forming, we can get our kids better prepared for kindergarten and their K-12 experience and close that gap on the front end. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the rebranding, renaming, retooling of Lively Technical College, because we know all kids aren't meant to go to college, and it's okay. You're not a failure. There is another path. And to partner with CareerSource and the Chamber to make those things happen for kids. The projects at Rickards and Fairview, I am very proud of the work we've done over the last 4 years, but there are many things still on my to-do list. And if I'm reelected, I am fully committed to get those things accomplished. But again, you couldn't have written a better story. I've had a wonderful career and look forward to hopefully serving another 4 years.
Thank you, sir. And through luck of the draw, Dr. Pam Hightower, the final word goes to you, ma'am.
I want to address the whole child, the educational needs, the emotional, the social, the physical, and the mental needs. I think we do that by making sure we're providing a safe, nurturing, and caring environment for our children to learn and for our staffs to work. I want to increase the mental health services for our students. As Mr. Hanna said, I'm in school every day with those schools that I work with. And I see the needs of our schools. I see the students who are hurting. I see some of the mental health challenges that some of our students are facing and the impact it has on their learning and teachers' teaching. So we want to make sure that we're providing those mental health services. We need to also make sure that we're providing services to our parents, that we're putting on workshops, especially in our African-American communities, where mental health is not something that we talk about a lot. So we need to make sure that we're educating our African-American families to see those signs of what children are having some challenges and get the help through the school district where we can have trained mental health counselors to work with our students. I know a lot of our parents, the students are having some emotional, some ESC issues, some autistic, some trauma issues. We need to make sure that we are addressing all of those needs. The second thing we want to do is close the achievement gap. And I'm so sorry that I got emotional, but closing the achievement gap, 40% of our students in our last FSA, approximately 40% of our third grade students are not reading on grade level. That is unheard of. That is not something that we want to be proud of. We need, with a university, we have Florida State, as I said earlier, Florida State, FAMU, and TCC here. And we have some of the best teachers anywhere. And we have 40% of our students that are not reading on grade level as of the last FSA. And I hate to see what that will look like this year with the learning slide that we're going to experience from COVID if we don't put something in place to help that. We've talked about recruiting and retaining teachers. Our president has made them essential workers. We have always known that they were essential workers and they should be valued and paid as such. We want to show our appreciation. I don't think there's anyone in this nation that cannot appreciate teachers where they are right now. When we had to pivot home and grandparents had to become teachers, I think it became real that teachers are really important. Not only teachers, the bus driver, everyone that it takes to run a school. Schools don't exist because of me, or the superintendent, Ms. Washington. It doesn't exist because of us. It exists because of the students that we must serve. It is our job to provide a quality education for those students at whatever cost. So schools and anybody who worked for me will tell you, Dr. Hightower will tell you quick, you're not here because of you. You're here because of the students and the parents who allowed us the opportunity to work with our children. So we need to make sure that we are valuing them, that we're listening to what their needs are and giving them timely feedback and giving the response that we can in a timely manner. The other thing that we want to make sure that we're looking at is giving instructional leadership capacity. That means professional development so that our teachers can improve their craft, that we're providing those opportunities for them in a time. I know with the COVID, we're all having to do things Zoom with Zoom now. But if that's the new norm, that we just make sure that we're giving them the most targeted professional development that we can possibly give. And the next thing, we talked about the graduation rate. I looked at the last graduation rate. It is 97%, but our traditional graduation rate, students are going through getting the 24 credits, is at 59%, which I think is greatly impacting a lot of other issues that our students are having. I think the crime rate, they can't read. So all of those things are impacted when our students can't read and they're not successful. With a 59% graduation rate, I don't think that can be something we can be proud of, though it may be high because of the other. And I was a Title I director, so I understand some of those alternative pathways that we're using. But I want to increase, as the superintendent said, we have Lively, which is an excellent program. Everyone is not going to college, but there's a career path. We didn't make sure that we're utilizing that. As a principal of a Title I school, I had a young lady at my school who was very bright. I went to her high school graduation on Thursday at Rickards, and I went to her. I was invited to her graduation from TCC. She got her AA on Saturday, her high school diploma on Thursday. We didn't make sure that we are sending more students who are capable of that track and getting on track with that. Early learning. We got to start at the ground. It doesn't start from the high school to move down. It starts from early learning. We must expand the pre-K program. We have empty classrooms at several of our schools and at Wesson. So we need to make sure that we're utilizing those classrooms and starting with early intervention for all of our students. And the next thing we want to do is make sure that we're having family engagement. that we're looking at, informing our parents. Informed parents will be there to support you. And it doesn't mean that they have to be at a PTO meeting every time the door opens. My dad, as I said, was a truck driver. My mom was a maid. She couldn't go to PTO meetings. My dad couldn't come to PTO meetings. But they made sure that we went to school every day ready to learn. Our homework was ready. And if there was a problem at school and someone got in touch with mom or my dad, then it was taken care of. So sometimes they can't come, but they can be there to support us in other ways. So we just need to make sure that we're engaging our family and our community. And finally, we need to make sure that we're having open and timely communication with all of our stakeholders to make sure that if there's a concern, that we get back with them in a timely manner, that we'll go listen, making sure that they understand that we're listening to what they're said, what they're saying. I believe that every child in this district can learn. I have a plan that is going to take our district and move us forward. I think with the compassion, with patience, we're going to get through this. This is not going to last always. But on the other end, because why I decided to run for superintendent for all of those reasons, it wasn't because of the COVID. It's because of all the reasons that I aforementioned. So though we're going to get back to those times. So we need a leader who is compassionate, who is an instructional leader, who understands curriculum and instruction, and will be there to make sure that our students move forward. So let's join Hightower. Let's join Team Hightower, Hope, helping others produce education. That means that we're going to use everyone in this community. It will take a village, and together we will all rise high.
Thank you, Pam Hightower. Thank you, Keisha Washington. And thank you, Rocky Hanna, for being part of our first Political Perspectives in the run-up to the November 3rd general election. Perspectives produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Thanks to Taylor Cox, Paul Dam, Amy Diaz de Villegas, Tricia Moynihan, Lydell Rawls. Devin, thank you, too, for all your help. Our Director of Content, Kim Kelling, for setting things up. I'm Tom Flanagan. Next Political Perspectives, Thursday, September 24th, will focus on the Leon County Commission at Large Group 1 contest. We invite you to join us then for another Political Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. Take care.
For more information about Perspectives and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org.